You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California has set lofty goals in the pursuit of reducing its carbon footprint and minimize the impact of climate change. Part of that effort includes encouraging residents to make this transition in their everyday lives, from buying electric cars, swapping out stoves, and installing solar panels. But for many, the environmental argument for going green may not be convincing enough to make the switch, especially when many of these technologies are financially out of reach. But a new pilot program in Sacramento aims to help low-income homeowners who live in older, gas-reliant houses make the transition free of charge. CAP Radio environment reporter Manola Sakaida joins us to tell us more about the program and share what she learned speaking to Sacramento residents who are taking part in this pilot program and the energy transition. Good morning, Manola.
Morning. Happy to be here.
So let's just start off by explaining what the pilot program is for SMUD and what spearheaded it and what the long-term goals are.
Sure. So the program was launched by SMUD earlier this year. And, you know, it started after a lot of conversations with community organizations. It's a pilot program aimed at transitioning kind of older gas-reliant homes to more efficient, greener appliances. And it's specifically targeted at people who can't really afford those changes on their own. You know, for example, transitioning like a gas stove to an electric stove, you know, not something people might necessarily be able to do on their own, but this program would actually allow them to swap those out for free. So that's the main focus. And right now they're focusing on the Gardenland neighborhood, which is this neighborhood in northern Sacramento, if you haven't heard of it before. And they're planning on expanding to other neighborhoods, but this is kind of where they're starting. And then the really long-term goal here, the overarching goal, is that they want to help low-income people transition to greener appliances, you know, throughout the county. And that would hopefully not only get them closer to their goal. You know, SMUD's own goal is to eliminate carbon emissions from their power supply by 2030. But like you mentioned, California has its own goals in making this transition.
2030 feels like it's right around the corner when you're talking about climate change.
Right.
So when it comes to the pilot program, how did SMUD select residents who qualified?
Right. So it's aimed at low-income homes. So there's that kind of financial requirement there. And, you know, getting it started is pretty straightforward. Basically, a resident just makes a call to SMUD. If they think they qualify, they figure that out. And then SMUD sends over a specialist to kind of walk through the home with that resident. And then together, the resident and the SMUD employee will kind of discuss, you know, what could be swapped out in the house, what they want to keep, and just, you know, really start that discussion.
As with most things that are these big, meaty challenges that we face collectively, I mean, there are these intersections at play. So when it comes to going green, there's this intersection of the environment and also equity. And as I think a lot of us know, we may have a desire or an inkling to want to be more energy efficient, but oftentimes it costs a lot of money. So What does this reflect when it comes to the bigger challenges that California is facing in making that transition to greener energy accessible to everyone?
Right. And like you said, this is a conversation that everyone's having all over California. So, you know, on the state level, there's these really big changes that need to happen. California is committed to 100% clean energy by 2045, which is, you know, a pretty big goal. And, you know, more importantly, actually, or more immediately, I should say, is that the state has promised that they'll be 90% of the way to that goal by 2035. So that's even sooner. And then, you know, we've seen some changes towards getting us towards cleaner energy in the state, like the state's mandate that all cars sold here must be electric vehicles by 2035. So there's just, you know, a lot going on when it comes to the goals that California has for cleaner energy in the state. And, you know, that's really going to impact everyone living here, and something we'll all be thinking about for, you know, coming years.
Yeah, there's like more than 40 million of us who call California home. And there's also a lot of research that's devoted to this. What did you learn from people who are researching this issue about what will make this transition successful?
Right. There's, you know, some immediate obstacles, I guess, in these conversations. And one of the first ones, and it's kind of like an instinctive reaction for most people, is the idea that, you know, what if this isn't affordable to me? You know, how am I supposed to, you know, afford this thing that might be affecting a lot of my life?
In a state that is a high cost of living state.
Exactly. Exactly. So I was curious about that, too. Obviously, there are people that are thinking about the answers to that. So I kind of looked around and I ended up talking to Alan Jen, who's a researcher with UC Davis's Institute of Transportation Studies. And a lot of his research focuses on the switch to electric vehicles, but he also has a lot of these conversations. And basically, he told me that, you know, the conversations he has with people and their questions when they're discussing transitioning to greener energy and technology has a lot to do with these concerns.
There's this question of like, okay, we are transitioning to, let's say, these greener technologies, we're electrifying everything, right? Then, okay, I don't see the sort of necessarily the immediate benefit. And in a lot of cases, these things are more expensive. So you're asking me to spend more money to, I guess, quote unquote, support the cause, right? And so that is a totally valid sort of response to this technology transition.
Yeah, basically makes sense that to a lot of people, especially people who don't have the money to just, you know, buy replacements for appliances at home right off the bat, these environmental arguments aren't really, you know, what really makes them want to do it or feel like it's even feasible, right? So he told me that there's something we can do about that and that there's already some efforts to address that part of it.
We think that for this transition to be successful, you know, people have to want to buy into the technology. They have to believe that it's not only worth it in terms of, let's say, making the environment cleaner, but also that it's sort of just better for them. And I think that can happen, right? So with electric vehicles, at the point where the technology is cheaper and the product is like better than a gas car, you know, why wouldn't people make that transition, right? And similarly, you know, for other technologies, like, okay, you want me to switch to an induction, or you want me to get rid of my heater and get a heat pump. You know, at the point where these things become more affordable and can perform the services that you want in a way that's better than your conventional technology, then I think that there's no reason why people won't make that switch.
So, you know, the main thing in what he's talking about is making these technologies, you know, actually appealing, you know, mm-hmm. not just an environmental swap, but something that is going to make, you know, their utility bills a little bit easier, just going to overall be a little bit more efficient. And then eventually, you know, even bring some costs down. But, you know, there's other obstacles, especially for the SMUD program, and that had more to do with gaining trust and building a relationship with the people living in the Garden Land neighborhood.
Yeah, there's that big obstacle of getting people to think way into the future of like 2045 when they're just trying to get by every day in California. Mm-hmm. And then there's this more nuanced issue within the city of Sacramento. So let's dive into Garden Land, this neighborhood. What is the obstacle that they had to overcome, and what did you learn about the pilot program?
Right. Yeah. And I talked to some representatives with community organizations in the area to learn about Garden Land and its history and just really understand why, you know, there might be distrust that community members might have with a utility coming in and making changes to their home. And one person I talked to was Julie Broughton. She's the executive director of the Stanford Settlement Neighborhood Center, which is a community organization located in Garden Land. And she told me that this issue isn't unique to the neighborhood and that there's a specific way her organization attempts to work with the community in ways that maybe other organizations might not immediately think to.
So many times for under-resourced neighborhoods, people from the outside come in and want to fix things for the people. And that's not our agency's approach. We try to start on the same level and say, this is what we have. How can we help? What can you do? So I think that there's an equity issue about how any organization or any group or any company comes into a community. First step is you have to get to know that community and you have to understand just a little bit of their history so that if you want to have a big impact, you really need to start where people are at and not talk down, but join with.
And she told me about the neighborhood's history and how distrust might come into play specifically in Garden Land.
Garden Land is one of the oldest communities in Sacramento. The first homes were built out here in 1925. And there's 4 and 5 generations of families still living in some of those houses, which if they were built in 1925, they're probably not up to today's codes. So it's not as simple as just going in and saying, here's a free electric water heater. It's, where is your current water heater? Is it enclosed properly? Do we need to build something to make it possible to install that appliance up to code? It's a really way more complex issue than we're here to provide free stuff.
Yeah, basically what Julie is getting at here is the fact that residents had a lot of concerns about SMUD employees entering their homes and potentially getting them in trouble if parts of their homes weren't up to code for reasons that were really out of their control, you know, whether financially or other reasons.
A lot of homeowners probably don't want an inspector coming by
exactly.
and checking on them. Yeah,
exactly. So these are all conversations that had to happen, you know, even before SMUD launched the program and started, you know, knocking on doors.
So this is really like a new approach, especially with this community organization that you met with about, you know, kind of like avoiding steamrolling into a neighborhood. So how did community members end up having these conversations with SMUD?
Yeah, there was a lot of lead up to the program actually launching. A few community groups came together and asked SMUD actually to meet with the community first before moving the program forward once they learned about it. Those community meetings at the beginning were organized by the Sacramento Environmental Justice Coalition and also the Community Resource Project. And then after that, organizations in Gardenland like Julie's really took on the work of, you know, keeping up with SMUD and letting them know about the neighborhood's history and how they needed to be, you know, sensitive to that history if they wanted their program to work. You know, not even just to have it be well received, but actually for people to want to sign up. So, you know, another person I spoke to about that was Marbella Sala. She's the president of the Gardenland Northgate Neighborhood Association. And she told me that, you know, in these conversations, you know, she and others really told SMUD that residents just wouldn't participate in the program if they thought it would put their housing situation in danger. And that was something that Sala told me that SMUD didn't really have on their radar right away. But they wanted to do something about it. They were receptive. And after more conversation, Sala told me that they came up with an agreement. SMUD won't report anything that they see when they're checking out a home. And that's been the first step to building trust.
The first thing is getting them to trust that SMUD's not going to report them, that there's not going to be any unintended consequences for them coming into their home and doing an assessment. And that's been a little bit of a challenge. But I think as more families can tell their stories to the other families, like, look, it was a good thing. And I got air conditioning when I never had air conditioning. I got new windows. I didn't have to pay, and it was safe, and they were good, and they were respectful, and no one reported me. Then others are more trusting and say, okay, that's a good thing, and we want this.
And just for more detail on SMUD's side, they told me that they're not entering homes to report code violations, but, you know, sometimes they can't do work if something in the house related to what they're working on is not up to code. So what they've been doing is, you know, if the utilities employees come across something in a home that's not up to code, their plan is to help make those necessary changes, however possible, because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's important that the house be safe to live in, but also that SMUD doesn't create bigger problems for the residents.
Yeah, and those community organizations and also word of mouth are just so crucial to building trust. And that liaison is so important for SMUD to work with this neighborhood, Gardenland in Sacramento. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Cap Radio environment reporter Manola Sakaida about a pilot program in Sacramento helping low-income earners make the green energy transition free of charge. So for this story, you visited Sacramento's Gardenland neighborhood, I would imagine, and you also spoke with residents who qualified for the program. One of the residents you spoke with was Daniel Pruna. What did you learn about Daniel?
Yeah, so Daniel was really sweet. We had a chat with him inside his home. I got to meet his little dog, which was very cute. And for Daniel, you know, he told me that first and foremost, this was a cost-saving thing for him. He'd actually been thinking about this for years. You know, a few years ago, he started installing solar panels in his home with his spouse, and that had already lowered their electricity bills. And then, really sadly, his spouse passed away earlier this year, and, you know, he really struggled with that loss, and it obviously changed parts of his life. And there were some financial concerns for him. But he said that he also qualified for the program this year, and this program has really helped him out in that financial side of things.
I feel like I'm going to be able to afford to retire here comfortably. And I feel like that with the savings, even though my spouse has dearly departed, I don't have to have the fear or the worry of having to rent out a room in order to make ends meet because my electricity bill has gone down. And now I won't have a PG&E bill, and things are working out for me financially.
So, you know, for him, they've replaced broken fans in his house, you know, fans that have been broken for a long time. They're replacing his fridge with something more efficient. They're getting him LED lights, an electric HVAC unit. And what that means for him is that his house is going all electric and basically cutting out his PG&E gas bill. So with the electric bill, he told me that it's also cutting down those expenses because, you know, overall his appliances are going to be more efficient than before. So he's really, you know, a case of did not come into this with the environmental first mindset, but has really seen a lot of financial benefits.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. I mean the improvements that were made on his home. Another resident you spoke with was 86-year-old Anindita Daniel. How did you meet her, and what stands out to you about her?
Yeah, another really sweet person I got to spend some time with who also had a dog.
I see you like dogs.
Yes. Yeah, a cute chihuahua. I was introduced to her by Jose Medina, and he's one of SMUD's energy specialists. So he was the guy that checked out her home. I visited her home with Jose, and she talked to me about all the changes she's making in her home. And then she also told me that, you know, for her, actually, you know, a lot of it was environmental, and that she kind of knew about some of these environmental benefits before the program. And then in the course of the program and, you know, kind of being educated about some of these swaps in her home, she's learned about some more of those environmental benefits.
Hay muchos beneficios y también para el cambio climático, que quiero repetir porque pues en el aire, en la atmósfera, respiramos las cosas que no están bien ahí. Y la electricidad nos ayuda para no usar otros productos, otras cosas.
And you might have heard her dog barking in the back a little
Chihuahua.
Bit there. But basically what she just said was that, you know, there's a lot of benefits here, especially for climate change, and that she just wanted to emphasize that. And that also, you know, in the atmosphere, you know, there's a lot of things that we breathe in that aren't healthy for us, and that's a product of pollution. So transitioning to electricity, she says, is a part of taking that pollution away from the atmosphere. So that's, you know, kind of what she told me, what she was, her understanding of what was going on. And she also said that, you know, alongside that, and she, you know, she's really excited to be part of that change for future generations. You know, she also did want to have some ownership over what was happening in her own home. So for example, she's getting everything swapped out except for her stove. She wanted to keep her gas stove. And, you know,
it is a big deal, especially, I don't know, in Mexican. I'm half Mexican. In Mexican households, it's a big deal.
I was going to say, and actually, Maria Sala, the community organizer I was talking to before that, mentioned that, you know, a lot of Latino homes specifically want to keep the gas stoves.
It's a big thing.
Exactly. And so being culturally competent and not just steamrolling someone who wants to keep something and really allowing them that space to say, this is what I want, is really, really important, not just in, again, making this happen in a culturally competent way, but getting people to actually want to be part of it and think that or know that their personality will still stay in the home that they live in.
And I mean, the elephant in the room here is that Anindita knew a lot about the benefits of the environment, now receiving the benefits of it and the cost as well, but also communicated what she wanted and did not want to happen to her home. However, she speaks Spanish. And so there's a language barrier here. What did you learn about the role language can play in achieving energy transition?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, luckily I was able to speak to her in Spanish because I speak Spanish. But, you know, one thing she told me is that before this project, she had not spoken to a SMUD person that spoke in Spanish. It would always been an English speaker. She has some family, so I assume that, you know, she's able to speak a little bit of English and then has some family help at times. But she said that this time, you know, she was able to talk to Jose in Spanish, and that really kind of opened up this project to her in a different way. And she told me that, you know, it helped her gain more trust and confidence in the program and its objectives, and that, you know, being able to actually speak to someone in her first language just really was a benefit that she didn't even know she could have. Mm-hmm. And again, is something that SMUD has been trying to improve in this program, you know, coming to people in the languages that they speak, and really trying to make sure that trust is built in that way.
Yeah, meeting people where they are, that's a huge ingredient to building
exactly.
trust. Finally, Manol, in the last 30 seconds or so that we have, I mean, this isn't only about money. It's also a cultural shift. What did you learn about that?
Right. So, you know, everything we're getting at is, you know, getting at the idea that we need to make this transition, definitely, but we also need to know about the history of communities, their needs, and we have to really collaborate with them and not just tell them, you know, this is the point that we need to make, this is what we need to do without their participation. And, you know, for SMUD, that means that progress has been slower. And they've said that to me. It's slower than they anticipated. But the point is that if you're working with community, it's going to take a little bit more time. But in the long run, it's going to be, you know, a better relationship with them. And it's going to be, there's going to be more trust so that this actually becomes a widespread phenomenon that's really adopted by people.
Manola, thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Manola Sakaita is Cap Radio's environment reporter. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.